I thought this was our very last meeting for this third term. So much so that I did prepare my 2-hour farewell speech, but unfortunately, they have been alerted that we are coming again next week. So next week will be our very last meeting. And we've already agreed on a very, what I think is very important topic that we'll be discussing next week on this quality education. And hopefully the union will also be among us so that we commit ourselves as we go out there to education. So our very last meeting for the third term, therefore, will be next week. Again, as you remember, we did this. We have been threatening to take a group photo. So today is the day to do that. Yeah. I have invited the other members who have been deployed elsewhere. That is Honorable Mthembu, Honorable Matsumela, and our Deputy Minister, Andre Gaung. Remember, those are the members of this committee until late. So because of that, we have agreed, I hope you'll endorse that we'll be taking that for at 12:30. So they are where they are. They will join us at that time. Yes. Yes. 12:30. The only person who cannot be here is Honorable Tim. He is out in the field. I hope we are agreed on that we are going to be doing that in order to accommodate them. I hope I'm not going to mess up some of the members. Now, I say our program, I don't know how far the program will be going, but at 12:30, that is the time for them to join us for the photo. So we are here today to discuss this issue of our NSFAS. And welcome everybody. I don't know whether we have any issues under personalia to share. If not, I see the big contingent from the department of NSFAS. Welcome. I'll hand over therefore to the department to share for.
Chair, thank you, and good morning again to honourable members. I don't think we've got much to say today. The CEO of NSFAS, Dr. Nyker, is here, together with the Chief Operating Officer and others of his team, and I think we should invite him then to introduce the team and make the presentation. Dr. Nyker?
It's actually Mr. Nyker.
Mr. Sorry,
before I get accused of acquiring a title I don't have. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Director General. I'd like to quickly introduce the team. Next to me is the Chief Operating Officer of NISSA, Linda Nshlomayo. And to my right is Bonnie Feldman, who is the Communication and Development Officer. And we've just come with two members today because there were specific questions that the committee wanted us to answer, and these are the two people that can help with that. We seem to be technology challenged at this particular point in time. With your permission, Chair, should I just continue with the printed handouts, as it were? Yeah. The two slides that changed since we submitted our handouts, but I will actually identify those as we go on. The question from the Portfolio Committee on Education was to look at what processes that NISSA has put in place to prevent new and returning students from being turned away from higher education institutions because of an inability to fund the registration fees themselves. And what we've tried to do in the presentation is to address this question specifically and also raise some of the other questions that have been raised with NISSA through the year. I think the first thing that we want to actually say is that in line with current practice, and that's the point that we want to emphasize, that in the previous year, we had a process in place, and that process continues in 2008, where NSFAS actually informs all higher education institutions about the ability to ask for and request for upfront payments to assist with things such as registration fees and the like. And it is not compulsory for a higher education institution to take up this offer, but whenever an institution does make the request, it's facilitated very quickly. One of the changes that's taken place this year is that last year we earmarked 20% of the total budget that's allocated to a higher education institution for NSFAS funding. We've now increased that to 30% of that total budget that's available for upfront payments. And in 2010, we will again review whether it's necessary to increase the percentage amount even further. So that's something that we've had in place. Not all institutions have taken up the offer, but those that have been able to manage the whole issue of upfront registration fees and the like, including things like meals and when students do pitch up on campus, especially if they're coming from destinations that are quite a distance away from the university itself. On the next slide, what we've done is to actually put the extract down of the actual letter that was sent out and the process that we follow at NSFAS. You'll notice that we do actually tie in the upfront payment or the request for upfront payment to the NSFAS student themselves. And the reason we do this is that we want to make absolutely sure that NSFAS funding is in fact spent on NSFAS students and not on anything else. Even we don't actually want to get involved in any kind of temporary arrangements with the higher education institution. So we do actually ask for details about the student against which upfront payments are being requested. As you can see not the next slide, but the one after that, that there aren't that many institutions that take up upfront payments because a number of universities have in their admissions process already taken a decision which says that if we are talking about registering NSFAS students, we are not going to insist necessarily on any kind of registration fee and the like. So there is this relationship with NSFAS and the universities and the university students. Those universities who choose to take up the offer have between January and March of the registration year to actually do so. In other words, we have had instances where initially a university will not take up the offer, but will subsequently, in the first quarter, make a request for funding. In 2009, we only have, at the moment, three universities that have taken up the offer, and that comes to a total of 62 million, but it's early in the year. Registration really starts accelerating in February through to March, and there could very well be other institutions that ask for upfront money. What I actually have done is I have taken the opportunity to actually talk to some of the vice chancellors about upfront payments and whether they're interested in taking it up. I talked to Professor Gumbi of the University of Zululand, and Professor Gumbi made two comments. She said at this particular point in time, due to the CEO's team visiting Zululand last year and spending several days to help with formulating procedures, processes, and actually doing some training of the financial aid office, Professor Gumbi indicated that their registration is going a lot better. And for them, at this particular point in time, the upfront payment issue at Zululand is not a pressing issue. They're moving along quite nicely with their registration. But she is fully aware that the offer is there and can be accessed between now and the end of March. One of the things we thought would be useful is to actually put an extract from the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University communication on this issue of upfront payments, because basically what they've done is they've taken the NISFAS letter and incorporated it into their communication with their students who are possible candidates for NISFAS funding. And it shows very clearly this integration of, if you like, what we do at NISFAS and how it actually translates itself at the level of the university itself. And it's a good example, and it's the kind of example that we actually will take to a meeting with financial aid officers in the middle of the year to give them an idea in how you incorporate NISFAS policy with their financial aid processes. What is also important about the extract from NMMU is that it's not just a case of using upfront payments for registration fees. In their communication to students, it's about book allowances, residence meals, living allowances, off-campus. Living allowances are those students who come from the area itself, and attending the local university, as it were, getting a living allowance. And, of course, for off-campus students, students are living in town and so on, the allocation also has been added. So the way upfront payments are being used is wider than just simply registration fees. And from what we can gather, it's being used quite effectively. Chair, what I'd like to now do is to ask the CEO, the COO, Linda Nstrumayo, who manages our interactions with institutions, to actually now talk about the nature of these interactions and the kind of work her section does on a day-to-day basis, which I think would be useful for the community to know.
Within NESFES, we have a department that's dedicated to liaising with the financial aid offices on a daily basis. What they do is the team is involved in the administration of the loan agreement forms that are sent by institutions. But more than that, myself and Anthony, who's the manager of the awards administration, are involved in the visits to institutions. So we travel to all university on request, but also we do propose that, you know, they set aside time for us to come and conduct training. We spend 1 or 2 days, depending on the nature of problems per institution. We have arranged training workshops, provincial training workshops, in the month of April this year, just before they start sending in their claims for 2009, because we feel that, you know, year in, year out, you get a lot of new employees within the financial aid office, which creates a problems for institutions to submit their claims on time, to ensure that the information that they send to NESFES is correct and accurate, and therefore we've set aside the month of April for those provincial workshops. So my team and I will be traveling to all 7 provinces where there are these universities. Furthermore, we welcome institutions themselves to visit us at NESFES, because sometimes it's difficult for HEIs to discuss their specific problems in a group of people, so they would rather, you know, come to our offices so that we can attend to their problems, to their specific problems. And I meet a lot with the SRC of various institutions. You know, when I do this visit, I always insist on having meetings with the SRC, so that it's important for the financial aid office to work effectively, that they're involved, and we encourage that institution has a financial aid committee which is representative of student leaders, because it's important for student leaders to understand the necessary processes and the processes within the university so that it's easy for the flow of information and from the student point of view why certain decisions are taken. Because the moment you exclude the student in the process, that's when you experience problems. So from time to time, I get to meet with leaders in all the way I travel and also involve the dean of students as well. So it's not just meeting with the financial aid office, but it goes beyond that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda. Some of the things that Linda and her team have done, which has been very effective, is that at the Vaal University of Technology, the head of the financial aid office, unfortunately, passed away in an accident. And because there were not other tiers of specialist staff within the financial aid office, Linda sent off a task force to actually assist the university. And in fact, we'll leave tonight to Bart to sit on a selection committee to choose the next head of the financial aid office. So those kind of interventions...
Can I say that? You pressed your...
Oh, it's gone off. I'm sorry. Right, so those kind of interventions, whenever they arise and we think are necessary, we do actually participate in. There was also the issue of a misunderstanding between the FRC and management at the Cape Peninsula University of Technology. And again, Linda actually mediated between the two bodies, and now there's a good understanding of how NISFAS policy and CPUT's processes actually aligned themselves. And really, there was a lot of information that was inaccurate that created unnecessary heat in the admissions and registration system at the university. But that's now been sorted out. One of the major initiatives that will take place in the middle of the year by the COO is in fact the interaction with all financial aid officers countrywide. We're going to do this on a provincial basis, and what we've come to realize that it is important at this particular point in time not only to deal with the head of the financial aid office. In fact, it's the COO's insight that what we need to do is to meet the financial aid officers themselves together with the head. And these provincial workshops that we will have, led by our COO, will deal with all issues of connected with NISFAS funding, and we will even look at future relationships and how best to consolidate the relationship that we have with universities. And we are pretty confident that this type of workshop that involves all financial aid officers will in fact build capacity and greater understanding of what this particular business is about. The NISFAS plan to communicate with students, and this is one of the reasons why we thought it was important for the communication and development officer to be present. In our review that was conducted during 2008, we came to realize that many students only became aware of NISFAS when they arrived at university. And there was a need for students to actually have good, up-to-date, correct information about NISFAS. I mean, some of the interventions that Linda deals with are, in fact, largely due to incorrect information that's out there. And so having identified those two important issues, we've taken the decision that NISFAS needs to increase its contact with schools, particularly in rural South Africa. In a conference on careers and so on, where NISFAS was asked to present a keynote address, what we came to realize that even at the level of careers, career exhibitions and so on, too many of them are confined to the large cities, and not enough of those exhibitions and information opportunities actually go to rural South Africa. And we are now in negotiation with one of these major bodies to come up with a mechanism where they can take out to rural South Africa information about NSFAS, NSFAS funding, and funding in general, because there are many other opportunities like scarce skill funding and so on that's available. And as far as the communication plan is concerned, we really do want to have a presence at universities during registration. So it's not a presence all through the year, because that would be an extremely expensive proposition. But we think at registration itself that we should actually have a presence where information about the funding that's under NSFAS administration can be made available. There is a measure of complexity around NSFAS funding that needs to be explained quite clearly to students. It's not just about general education funds. It's about all the various scarce skill funding opportunities that there are out there. And those opportunities are increasing. In fact, if one looks at a graph over the last probably 3 to 5 years, one sees a 300% increase in scarce skill funding that's now under administration at NSFAS. So it's quite important for us to explain the admission requirements and the exit requirements as they apply to scarce skills funding. And I think this is one of the important tasks that NSFAS needs to get involved in. Now, as part of the pilot exercise that we conducted, as you see from the slide, we were present at 2 Limpopo campuses and 7 Walter Sisulu University campuses. And there were some good learning experiences that actually came out of those visits, which we will incorporate into our training, and we will then have at each registration going forward a NSFAS presence. Obviously, the NSFAS presence on campus cannot be separated from the activities of the financial aid office. We work hand in glove with the university, and we work hand in glove with the activities of the financial aid office. This is not a declaration of UDI. Simply NSFAS picking up at the university and talking to students. We will do it through the major institution on campus that we work with, and that's the financial aid office. One of the other things that we want to do is to have a greater presence in schools, and we will actually report on how we intend actually doing this. One of the issues that came up in our review is that quite a few students have little idea what courses they can actually do at university, and will come with general, very generic notions that I want to do a BA. And with the increase in scarce skill funding, we think we actually have a responsibility to try and shape a student's response to what's out there by giving them more information about what it is that's possible. And yes, doing a BA is fine, but the different disciplines within the generic BA, BSc motif that can hopefully give students a good, well-rounded education, and in some cases a professional education as well, especially if you get involved in things like engineering. One of the other questions that was raised was the late receipt of funds by students. We have a process in place, as the slides indicate, where claims can be made on NSFAS from the first semester onwards, and it starts quite early for some universities in April, where they'll start making their claims. And we do see that many universities, in fact, on the next slide, this is the slide that I've updated with more recent information, so I'll just read from the updated slide, where the vast majority of universities, that is 20 out of 23, met the September 2008 target. Now, the 2008 target is both for semester one and semester two allocations to universities. In other words, they send us the loan agreement forms, the forms that are necessary for scarce funding, bursaries and the like, and we respond by then transferring monies to the university. Of the two universities that did not meet the 80% target, in fact, they did actually claim 70% of the allocation. Forte last year had a few difficulties and they made their first claim in November. But yesterday, I actually talked to Dr. Tong, the Vice Chancellor of Forte, and he informs me that they have had, from his point of view, and in terms of what we know from our relationship with the universities countrywide, they have actually registered already, as of yesterday, 77% of the university body. Now, the 77% actually covers all the undergrads, and they're now going to start with the registration of their postgraduate students. So this is really incredible achievement, and as part of this discussion, we talked about other opportunities of reducing the administrative overload by using new technology, which I'll comment on later. But this discussion with Dr. Tom yesterday was very informative, and it really was good to hear. In 2008, that is the 2008 academic year, the NSFAS WSU partnership worked very, very well in respect of how funding to students was managed, and that's also a good field story actually. One of the things that came out of the review, in fact very earlier on in the review, was that NSFAS's manually intensive operation placed a huge administrative burden on institutions. In fact, the nature of the discussion with Dr. Tom yesterday revolved around this administrative burden and what we can do about it. And what the review showed quite clearly is that as funding to NSFAS has increased, including scarce skill funding, so is the administrative burden at financial aid offices. And there was not necessarily a corresponding increase in the number of staff and so on that are recruited within financial aid offices. Also, I think if one uses any reasonable benchmark, there's a limit to how many staff you can bring on board over time just to manage an administrative load. You actually have to think out of the box and look for alternative ways to provide assistance. So, and to put it into perspective, you know, we manage approximately, I should say, 155,000 agreement forms. That requires huge manual effort at each financial aid office right around the country. They need to make absolutely sure that not only is the information correct, that if the information is not correct, they have to then, the forms are returned to institutions and they have to go through the whole process of making sure that the information is correct and sent back to NSFAS. And what that does is it causes quite a substantial delay in when the information is correct and we can transfer monies to the institution. So what are we doing about this systemic problem? 2008, great deal of time has been spent in trying to automate, to some extent, the electronic the form filling exercise that takes place at financial aid offices. And what we've now got in place, and we've actually tested this and piloted it both at TUT and DUT, is an electronic form system that in fact reduces this massive overhead that takes place at administrative overhead that takes place at FAOs. We also made sure that that this application complies with the National Credit Regulator and so on. So a considerable amount of work has been done. Out of the successful pilot, we are now ready to go live, and we're not going live in a big bang fashion. We are actually had discussions, and UKZN, UJ, TUT, DUT, Nelson Mandela, and UCT have agreed to utilize the system. And progressively, as universities are ready, we will bring them on board onto the new IT platform. We are acutely aware that you cannot simply have a view that every single university is ready to take on board new technology and so on. One actually needs to do an assessment at the university, get buy-in from the university leadership and their IT department and the financial aid office before you can actually roll out this new facility. And that's basically been our approach in respect of the universities that have agreed to date. In yesterday's conversation with Dr. Tom, he is also keen on participating, his university participating in going live with the new system. And we'll be visiting Forte on the 25th to actually demonstrate the system, do some training if necessary, and give them, if you like, a first feel of what this actually means in terms of their processes and how they work. And as the next slide says, what are we trying to do when we deal with the systemic issue? It's basically to address the question that have been asked. That is, how quickly can students get money into their fee account? That is the prime objective. And by reducing the time it takes for the process to complete using electronic forms, we can actually achieve that. In the pilot, both the DUT and TUT, we could see quite clearly that by using this application, the speed with which NSFAS can actually pay universities what they due reduces from what is now a minimum of some 30 days, and it's more than 30 days if your form's incorrect and wrong. I mean, it could even be as bad as 60 days if many, many batches of forms from universities are incorrect and have to go back. So we can see that within a matter of 3 days, 4 days, that large chunks of money can actually be transferred to the university. And by implication then, because there will be visibility of this transfer, there is no reason why then the university can't populate student fee accounts swiftly thereafter. Two slides down. The award amount per student. This was one of the other issues that has been raised with NSFAS. In fact, it's raised by a number of students and on some of our visits and so on. SRC members, for example, will raise this issue. And this issue really is much bigger than NSFAS itself. NSFAS can't unilaterally make policy decisions on this because it's a major question. We have a situation where demand for NSFAS funding and given the increase in admissions this year, there's going to be even greater demand for NSFAS funding in 2009. So given that the demand for NSFAS funding exceeds the annual budget allocation, right, how you then distribute is in fact quite a complex modeling exercise. I've just put down one bullet point here as an example. If we simply use the first come, first serve model, what happens to all those students who do not make the cut at a particular point in time? What happens to them? So it's quite a complex modeling exercise with many variables that need to be taken into account. Crucially, from our point of view, is that NSFAS funding is not capital expenditure. It's not one-off expenditure. It is, in fact, recurrent expenditure over substantial periods of time. I mean, we are in fact talking about decades. You know, it could be a decade, could be 2 decades. Now, to make NSFAS sustainable, this recurrent aspect of sustainability needs to be understood. So really, it's way beyond the capability of NSFAS to make such judgments, and it really belongs to the planning aspects of the state who can actually look into this. One of the things that we did do when we were last here, in fact it was a week after being appointed, I appeared in front of the Portfolio Committee. And one of the issues that the Portfolio Committee homed in on and wanted action on was the issue of making sure then that funding that's unutilized by one university is in fact distributed within the same academic year to other universities that had a need. We have actually put that in place, and it's been very effective. Once universities realize that it is in their interest to account for their drawdown on this less funding, because they could get additional funding, universities cooperated greatly, and we now have a situation where it is not an issue for us anymore. So within the 2008 academic year, we have been redistributing funds as accounting periods have come to the fore. For example, to give you an idea, on Friday, and I'm relying on memory here, Linda, we got a note from UKZN. It's one of the major recipients of the NSFAS funding, especially with the incorporation of teacher training colleges and the like. UKZN reported that they had a four-run credit in their NSFAS account. Now, what we are doing is, so there is strong evidence that the methods and the processes we have in place to reallocate funds is in fact working, and working very, very well, with the assistance of the universities. We couldn't actually do it with the buy-in of the universities. In December 2008, the Minister made an additional $39 million available, and this was distributed using a model developed by DOE and NSFAS. And the primary objective that the Minister put down was the need to reduce debt to those students who are receiving smaller NSFAS awards, and that has been another good injection of funds to our students, and again, obviously, very well received. While NSFAS is, I mean, I've used the word aggressively looking to identify issues. I mean, the reason I put it down is that because we see the work that we do as very important to the national well-being of the country, not just now, but going forward. And so looking at finding better ways to manage the administration of funds to further to FETs and higher education institutions is the reason that many of us are there. But the one point that I do want to make, and this is not on your slide, it's on the updated slide, it says, and the point is that irrespective of the technologies being introduced, the critical success factor for NSFAS is its relationship with universities and their financial aid officers. That is the critical success factor. Technology is incidental and there to help and to supplement what we're doing. It is the relationship with financial aid officers that is the key to our success. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you ever so much. I'm excited about that last part. They're saying you're moving money around, because we're furious at that. When we gave FET $100 million, they used 60 universities. That's two issues before I allow that you could add on, which were not part of the question. Even before I do that, we always protest here in the committee when slides are used, because they are not given pages. Because they don't have pages, if I want to ask you on slide number 7, it becomes difficult to go there. And in this one in particular, I think while this NSFAS logo is very beautiful, it is covering some of the facts. Mm-hmm. I'd rather not have it, because it's what that is. Let me just, I'll ask you to just comment on two issues before I allow the members. I thought it was not part of the question. One of my greatest concerns, I think I've been communicating with the office, it has to do not with the students that are left off, the cut-off point, it had to do with the students that are in the system, which to me it is a very crucial and important point. Where a student goes in, he's under NSFAS, he has signed everything, he qualifies in all respect. Come end of the year, he does not get his results. Why? Because he's owing. Come next financial year, he cannot register because he's owing. And the university is still debating and discussing, do we have a top-up or don't we? To me, that's a very important area, and which was not part of the question. I would like you to comment on that even before, because to me, if to go out and canvass for more students, while those who are already having, are already inside, are being frustrated. I think Linda knows my case, for example, for there, where this bright student who are doing everything, up to the last registration day, she was anxious, I'm going to be kicked out, I'm not even going to get my room. I say, this is one of the many. I do know it has a big, it falls under a bigger program. Do you get them, give them 100% or don't you? If you don't, what happens to the rest? I do know that story. But I think it's one thing that we need to look at head on. The second one that I would like you to comment on again, you referred in passing to FET colleges. The current phone calls that I'm getting from everywhere. I'm in this thing in the FET college. They want me to pay 650 rand registration. I don't have it. What do I do? And I think I got about 10 students in that dilemma. And that's throwing it to you again so that you can comment on that so that we do know how are you handling that? Has it landed on your own desk?
Sure. Let me start with the second question. NSFAS has currently a very narrow mandate as to what we do on the FET side. It is the process, the identification of students, and those kind of decisions actually rests in a relationship between the DOE and the DOE FET sector and the FET college itself. Our narrow mandate at this stage is the transfer of funds from DOE to the FET college. And there is a discussion that's taking place for the 2009 academic year of actually extending the mandate of NSFAS to deal more holistically with FETs in much the same way that we do with HEIs. But it is something that's, in fact, was raised at the last meeting that the Chief Operations Officer had with Dr. Mashlavi in Pretoria, and that was fairly recent. It was a fairly recent meeting. So that meeting, no doubt, will lead to a follow-up meeting where this is actually tied down in terms of what our responsibilities are. For example, one of the things we were told that is not in our area of work is the whole business of communications and so on around FETs. But that may well become part and parcel of the NSFAS communication generally in the same kind of way that we deal with HEIs. On the first question, it definitely has come to our attention that there are two issues of concern that must be addressed. The two issues are, one, the one that you raised about getting to the point of completion and then not getting the result. And the other one is where a student has perhaps just one module to do to actually graduate and is having financial difficulty. Now, on the issue of the one module or two modules that are left, and what we have done, and we've had for example, quite in-depth discussions with UWC much earlier on in 2008, where this problem was had surfaced, where we are basically saying that our role at NSFAS is to make sure that we do everything that ensures that students graduate, because if you don't graduate, you're not actually going to be contributing with the level of skills that are necessary in the country. So what we've done is we have opened the door for additional funding for those students so they can do the additional module or two modules or whatever it is and graduate. It is not a unilateral decision that's taken by NSFAS. We work under the guidance of the university, because they have to make the academic decision on that that this student is student that's likely to succeed and so on. We don't get involved in those issues, but we do actually provide the money. On the issue of students not getting the results, we are now going to actually look at how we make use of unutilized funding to make sure that this happens. And although you've raised the issue in terms of a few cases at Forte, this is an issue in other parts of the country as well. And we are going to actually put a policy in place so that universities know that stopping students from completing is not in their interest, and we need to just put down the rules as to how this will function. And we will take it up in much the same way that we took up this issue of a student being one module away from graduating. We're going to do the policy this month, because what we want to do is in these workshops with financial aid officers that we talked about. What date, Linda? April. Yeah. In April, we want to actually have the policy approved and for financial aid officers to be informed as to how we proceed going forward.
I'll come back. My members want to. I'll come back to. I still have more questions on those issues. Dr. Buena.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, sir, for your presentation. It's clearly laid out in the paper, except the fact that it does not tell us who qualifies for NSFAS. For instance, if parents' combined salaries amount to, say, 10,000 rand and have two children at university and the other two at high school level, would they qualify for NSFAS? And if a single parent is earning 12,000 rand, for instance, and has got one child at university and three at high school, would they qualify or not? I wish there was a slide that explains exactly who qualifies for NSFAS so that children don't have to go to universities and get frustrated being told that you don't qualify because your parent is earning 15,000 rand a month. Thank you. Chair, my question deals with with the upfront payments to the institutions. Now, it's clear that some institutions make use of this upfront payments and others not. And I've taken the point from the presentation that that NSFAS has been in touch with all of these universities. One just want to make sure that whether the university makes use of the upfront payments or not, that there are no students at university that qualifies for NSFAS that are disadvantaged in terms of the initial registration payments, etc. Because you've got the discrepancies between those. I think it said of the 2008 academic year, 20% of the university's NSFAS budget was made for upfront front payments. And one just wants to make sure that whether the institutions make use of or not, that our students who qualify are not unnecessarily disadvantaged. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Ndur.
That's one of two issues. I didn't see any slides that indicate what percentage of students who actually qualify because of limited funds cannot be helped. And what help can your institution do? Perhaps guaranteeing those loans from banks and so on, given that banks these days are very hesitant to give financial support to anybody, including students, because of the economic meltdown. And an indication how many, what percentage are you going to have this year of those who qualify? I'm excluding those who don't qualify for some reason or other. Some breakdown, how much money you are going to use this year. Thank you.
Is it not too early for your second question, madam? They are still registering as speak. Do you remember, MSI is going to come back later.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on with regard to students who are left with one or two modules to complete. Are the maybe time frame for completion? And then the other one, for those who became aware of the NSFAS on their arrival, are they assisted or maybe turned back, or maybe are they still to struggle to get the funds?
Prof, I the communication plan here indicates that NSFAS ran a pilot at several universities, and as part of this exercise, NSFAS was on the program during orientation of students. What does this entail in the main? That is this exercise, as it were. And I noticed that several universities were visited. Now I'm very jealous about my province. I always
Africa.
Yeah. Why is the Free State not included here? Yeah.
Chair, can I answer the last question? We were in pilot mode. Free State is not going to be excluded in the rollout. The rollout will take place to all universities. Yes. We're keeping our word. We will start with Free State.
Yeah, only yesterday I committed myself to pay outstanding fees to a firm of lawyers. For this particular student who could not, for one reason or the other, pay university fees last year, he hasn't received Now, there are unique circumstances, around this particular student. The parents are divorced, and she finds herself in this situation where the mother is ill, although she's working, she's ill, she has raised a loan, and all sorts of things happen, and at the end of the day, one asks himself, how can one, how can such, cases be attended to? Is there some kind of, mechanism where one could explain, a complex situation like this to NSFAS to say, why
further, you have the student's parents working. There are problems within the family, which actually lead to the student finding herself or himself in a situation where fees cannot be paid, because of misunderstanding. That actually has nothing to do with that. And people like us, at the end of the day, have got to come into the picture to try and assist. You see, I'm trying to appeal to NSFAS here to give me an explanation as to how I can recoup my funds from yourself. Perhaps I let the eloquence to sort of speak very clearly to you as to how this affects some of us, and perhaps most other parents out there and members of the Can I write a letter to you to explain this situation to you? And also claim from you what is missing. It will be interesting to see the nature of your response to my letter.
The anticipated response.
Yes.
Well, why is that the master don't await the writing of the letter? Because they are putting them in a, they're going to respond now. They don't know what to respond. I think that is where we come in actually from the very start, even before you submit. If there is a case that you think is genuine, which basically it is the institution that takes this decision from one or another, your motivation should have started there. Say, here is a case which is deserving. In the light of that, they say no or yes, and then. But now, let us not entertain it now, because they won't be able to find those details.
Yeah, they don't say so. Yeah, that's right. And, you know why I actually committed myself? Because this guy told me that today is the D-Day for registration, and he could not be allowed to register before he had actually paid the outstanding fee.
Chair, let me start with a general question that goes to the whole business of the NSFAS financial means test. Mm. The NSFAS financial means test was developed several years ago. We have now started the process of re-examining the variables that are taken into account to determine NSFAS funding in respect of the individual student. We are examining the entire model afresh, because there's a great, South Africa has changed somewhat, and the issue that one honourable member raised about, for example, having more than one child in university at the same time and so on. How does the model work? Although the model takes that sort of thing into consideration, we think this is a very good time to re-examine the model professionally. We have actually engaged now on a full-time basis a researcher, and we are in fact setting up a reference group made up of researchers from other entities and the like, and it was in fact going to be led by Professor Hall, who unfortunately is now going off to the University of Salford as Vice-Chancellor. But the idea is to re-examine the model. It is a complex business, because, and it will take the very least all of this year to produce a new model that addresses the current socioeconomic reality in South Africa. And we are aware that perhaps so some of the variables, the weightings of the variables in the model that was created some years ago may in fact have to change.
I think at the point now, before you come with the new one, you will have to know the old one. Well, what is the standard? Is it who qualifies? Minister 2000, 2000, 4000, in order to get one?
Chair, we can actually make that available. It would be very difficult for me to actually talk the model through now, but we can certainly make that available in terms of what does the model do now? How does it make its determination based on various factors?
The upfront payment and the disadvantage of those who are not those institutions.
The upfront payment issue, Chair, I will raise at the level of the Vice Chancellor. In the same way in which I've talked to Dr. Tom at Forte, I also spoke to Professor Connell at UWC, Professor Gumbi at Zululand. What I will do is to get in touch with the other university vice chancellors and basically say to them that I think that if your registration process is a bit slow, it's much better for you to make a request from NSFAS for upfront monies. If you are ready, like Forte seems to be ready, then it would be better for them to actually get the loan agreement forms to NSFAS so you can get paid the entire amount that's due for the student, for the NSFAS student. And that's what we'll take out of this meeting, Chair.
If I understood, Minister Panayavas, you are saying as we speak, the NSFAS student at VIP, which is not reflected here, is there a possibility that they are called upon to pay registration fees, even if they cannot afford them? I think that's a blunt question.
Chair, in all the CEO's daily contact with the university, we are not actually seeing that. And when it's brought to our attention, the CEO acts immediately to actually deal with those issues. But we are not seeing it as a major problem nationally at this particular point in time. What we do see from time to time is that students are actually having difficulties in terms of their academic standing and so on and so forth. But that's not an issue that sometimes gets conflated with upfront payments and the like, but that's an issue for the university and their admissions policy and re-entry policies and so on. That's not necessary. So, but the COO is not reporting that we are seeing huge numbers of students that are being disadvantaged in this way. And this is the information as of yesterday, Chair. This is the information. Now, it may well be that now that registration is on a high at many institutions, that we'll start seeing more of this. But the CEO is in fact in daily contact with the universities, and then we will act. We will act, and we will act not just at the level of the financial aid office. We will act at the level of the vice chancellor.
Well, what we have been telling people on the ground that despite the act saying you did not qualify for NSFAS until you are registered. Since 2005, the Department of Education took upon itself to not so that you don't have to. And why it possibly wanted to come in that atmosphere so that let's have this acceptance, this understanding. If you are accepted as an NSFAS student, the Department of Education comes and pays the registration.
Chair, I think one of the things that will really help this situation amongst other issues that arise is NSFAS presence at registration, which is what we're going to be rolling out.
I think that's very crucial. You know, as we're sitting here, I think I've got five students who can register because they don't have. Now, you're saying a computer base.
Can I ask my members? I'm phoning them 30 in the every other day, literally. Sometimes they even forgot to respond to them. I send them one after the other. I think, as members of this committee, well, why don't we take that? Let's not deal with problems that we're having. Let us communicate with the office directly so that these things are brought to their notice. But many times, they are not aware of it. Let us not wait for this meeting. Try to get his phone number, his email, his what have you, so that once you hit that problem, you pick up the phone there and then, your student's phone number 277 at KZN. She cannot let it. Yes, Peter.
I just wanted to thank you in the first place for making that appeal, because really this is the best way to deal with it. People are aware of individuals in any way who are facing difficulties. Clearly let NSFAS know. If it's something broader that we need to know about, we would certainly take it up, and I think that's certainly a helpful way. Chair, perhaps just to confirm that the whole approach is continually under review, and I think that point made around the FEP colleges is one that certainly we as the department need to look at. I think you'll recall the allocations for those FET bursaries were made at a pretty late stage. I think perhaps unfairly we offloaded them onto NSFAS, and I'm not sure that we spelt out all the details about how we saw it working, and clearly that's something we should do. But Chair, perhaps just two little cautions in regard to the invitation to send names and concerns in. One is, of course, to recognize that not in all cases is this 100% load that covers all costs. Students sign a contract indicating what will be paid by NSFAS and what their contribution would be. And Chair, I have to say that we need to recognize that there are obligations in that follow that, and we must not, in a sense, undermine those contracts, those commitments that have been made by, in a sense, now saying that because you're NSFAS, your entire problem is, in a sense, NSFAS's problem. If you signed a contract saying that you will do something, I think we need to, in some senses, hold students liable for those obligations. And perhaps on a similar note, Chair, I really don't want to be pessimistic about this. We do need to recognize also, you know, this isn't the Department of Social Development. We know that there are social, there are individual problems that people will face, and clearly, you know, we all as governments collectively have to try and respond to those. But I have to say that probably everyone around the table could identify a whole range of deserving cases. And again, if we just get a sense that we can offload these now to NSFAS and that NSFAS will respond in some way, I think we do need to be cautious. So really, Chair, I suppose what I'm just saying is perhaps as we get the information about individuals who have problems, let us be sure that we collect all information about them. What did they agree to in the first place? What have they done in terms of that agreement? Likewise, in terms of particular problems they might do, let's try and ensure we collect all those facts so that, as I say, NSFAS is not burdened with something ultimately that is probably beyond their mandate and certainly beyond their budget. Thank you.
But what frustrates me many a time, the NSFAS office in the university is not talking to its finance department. I get a case, I discuss it with NSFAS, and I says this student is qualified as NSFAS in April. I'm not theorizing, I'm a practical case. Come August, this student is still sent letters home. You are not going to come back, you are not going to do this. Who is doing that? It is the finance office. The NSFAS has not informed the student, and this NSFAS office is going to tell me and everybody, why did this student not come to me in October? Why is it that NSFAS office, which is having students which it knows are going to be funded by, is not alerting the finance department? The finance department is telling the student throughout the year, the student cannot concentrate. Getting this letter after letter, you are not going to get your June results, you are not going to this and that. And this student, it's not that funds are not there, funds are there. And as far as that institution knows, until I have written 5 letters to Linda, then at the end of the day, no, this student is no fine, there's no problem. These are some of the things that are really, I don't know, because it reflects badly on NFI. Right.
Chair, if I can respond to that. That's one of the issues that came out in the review of our processes. And one of the ways we're going to deal with it is in this new application, 90 platform we're putting out there, we are actually going to deliver a great deal of visibility. Because one of the problems is the student doesn't know that the money's been transferred from NSFAS, or the student doesn't know that their application that was filled in during registration has not arrived at NSFAS. So part of the deliverable of the electronic forms application system is to make visible on the web, right, for the student where their application is. And that student will be able to see that the money, is, when it is transferred, has actually arrived at the institution. For the higher education institution, the visibility that they will receive will be in terms of the loan agreement forms for a set of students and the monies that are applicable to that batch of students. So it will be visible for all to see, and the same with donors, because donors are making the same demands, Jay, that we are donating money and we want greater visibility as to when the monies are being paid, who's it being paid to, and so on. So what by making all of this a lot more visible, and we're going to use web technologies, and we're talking to the SRC, for example, it would be possible for those committees within the university, besides the finance department, to actually have visibility of the process and where a student is at. The manual system that we have now does not lend itself for this kind of visibility very easily. In fact, what you have is quite a lot of silos. In a sense, finance is a silo that's unaware of the activities of other silos that are part of the process. But with this new system, there's going to be a great deal of visibility, and what that will deliver for us is it will hold NSFAS's feet to the fire in terms of what its responsibilities are, and it will certainly hold the HEI's feet to the fire as well. We will be in it together in that respect.
I asked how many deserving students, even if the percentage, the capacity of health, given the fact that for most students you are the only source of financial refugee from the state. And what other avenues are there for such deserving students to look for help?
Chair, through you, we are currently in the process of accounting for the 2008 academic year, and we will certainly have figures as in terms of how many students and that kind of thing. But the bigger issue about are there other opportunities for NSFAS to explore. One of the initiatives that, in fact, was suggested by and is being driven by the chairperson of the NSFAS board is the need to engage corporate South Africa more effectively. And in fact, one of the subcommittees that's been set up, that is now it's a development subcommittee with a mandate to engage corporate South Africa, and is chaired by a member of, in fact, the CELC board, to actually try and go out and get more monies. One of the things that I've suggested to the board that we should investigate is that the number of insurance companies that have monies that have not been distributed to their members over time. Sanlam, for example, is in this category. And the development development subcommittee is, in fact, now engaging Sanlam as to whether NSFAS can be a recipient of those funds that are unused, and the funds could be considerable. Unfortunately, we were a bit too late with the Old Mutual. We arrived with the idea a bit too late. Old Mutual had already made their determination as to what they will do. The So those are some of the things that we're doing. The other initiative, also driven by the chair of the NSFAS board, is whether we can set up a geared fund with the banks, or a bank, so that preferential loans and the like can be made available to certain categories of NSFAS students. It's quite a complicated affair, because NSFAS is not, in terms of the current act, able to simply act as a bank. So that would be quite a set of very detailed and complex negotiations before we arrive at that. But these two initiatives are in fact being driven by the chair, Mr. Pichiana, the board.
Member Sang, when I asked on the two modules left out, whether they are timely. I'm sorry, it's going to be difficult for NSFAS to say, because they said they throw that university, it makes it judgment, an assessment, whether if you assist this student, he's going to finish. So I don't want to throw it to you, but all they are saying, if the university says, this student that is owing this one module, in order to get his diploma, we are able to fund it so that he can finish and be able to be employed. I think that's what they were saying. And in your absence, Dr. Boinamo, two questions were responded to. The first one is yours about means test. They are going to send us a copy of the current means test. Complicated it way, it is his, but you're going to get a copy of that. On the upfront, I think another understanding is that since 2005, the department took it upon itself to say, if a student qualifies in terms of NSFAS, that is, it will not going to be paying registration based on that means test. The department, the NSFAS comes in, and that student does not pay any registration. But it depends on him qualifying. But on my side, check again, the students that are in the system, and when NSFAS says we are topping up for those that are being kicked out, not getting their result, to me, I'm not sure what formula is used that you are able at the end to say, I'm topping up. Because to me, it would be good if you know beforehand, this student does qualify for a top up. So you don't wait until this student is denied a record and cannot register, and at the end of the day, when you are registering, who are still dropping up for the previous year. I don't know whether we can have a formula that is something like that.
Chair, I think the issue has to be dealt with proactively, as you're suggesting, and not as an after-the-event situation, because of the sometimes it can take too long, and the student could actually miss important opportunities to actually start studying in a particular semester. So we will look at a proactive mechanism to identify and discuss with the HEI and so that they can make a determination as to what NSFAS can do in this regard.
Thank you. Can I just point out that, you know, people come with a variety of problems to constituency offices. Some of these queries are of relevance to, you know, some may be of relevance to the Department of Home Affairs, Social Development, Health, you name it, you know. And as a public representative, it is not easy for you to say to this person with a problem, no, I can't help you. You refer the query to the relevant department. And I would just plead that, you know, if we have a query that is relevant to the Department of Education, and to NSFAS in particular, that, you know, it should be remembered, you should bear with us, that we're really not busy dumping, you know. You know, these issues on you. We're trying to say, here is a problem. I've been approached, and this public representative, I need assistance. So that at the end of the day, I'm able to go back to this person to say, I have done my best in terms of trying to assist, and this is the response. If I have to involve another department, you know, within the context of that problem, we can then jointly try to find a solution to the problem in order to assist, you know, this person in this place, if you like. Thank you.
I think we're
fine at all. Can you speak your voice? Can you see that last word, DJ? I'm still taking you to FET colleges now. It is this current problem that is affecting the FET. What is going to be happening when? I'm saying there are students now who cannot access those FET colleges because of registration. We do know that even in that front, I think the presentation last week was saying, it's not that we don't pay for registration. They pay and then we refer. That was the understanding.
Yeah. Chair, let me just say to the Honourable Mathale, I certainly was not implying in any way that we shouldn't be helping them. You know, but let's make sure that, in a sense, we ask the right people, I suppose, to do the right work, and we as the department would certainly take on that responsibility. Chair, I do understand since the presentation last week on the FET colleges that Dr. Mathale and others have been consulting with the colleges around the country. I can't say I've got a report back from them yet, Chair, so I really can't indicate at this stage, but I do know that they heard the message very strong from this committee last week that this is something that must be managed that ensures that no student is prejudiced. And, Chair, I think all I can do is offer to follow up with that, and certainly we will advise you on what we've done in that regard. I think Dr. Kubela had a comment that he'd like to raise if he can get out.
No, DG, thank you. Madam Masala, I think I just wanted to echo the DG's comment on the our responsibility as public servants to also support you and others in terms of executing your responsibility and mandate. And I'm sure I speak on behalf of the colleagues within the NSFAS as well. So we will do everything possible within our power to assist every member of our citizenry. The second issue, and I was just discussing quietly with the DG, with your permission, Chair, was you'll remember that in the House yesterday, the Minister did raise the fact that she would be instituting a review of the NSFAS. I think it's because of the importance of this instrument for our country as a whole, both in terms of the social equity that we're trying to achieve, as well as some of the economic imperatives that we're trying to achieve as a country. I think the focus, while obviously the colleagues within NSFAS are looking for operational modalities to look at efficiency, a review of this nature is really looking at the efficacy. How best are we structured to be able to deliver and reach those young people who it was the mandate and the idea of the NSFAS to reach? Are we reaching them? Are we able to support them and see them through the system? What are the bottlenecks? What are the policy changes that might be necessary? What are the system changes that might be necessary? What to do if we can do anything about people who fall outside of the NSFAS means test? But may find themselves in a predicament when they approach the commercial banks and others. So I think it's to echo the committee's concerns about the important role that the NSFAS plays. My last comment, Chair, is it's a pity that the colleagues didn't raise this, but government is spending an enormous amount of money. For those who will remember, I think Nasima would remember when this whole scheme was started, it was a contribution of what, 20 million? 20 million that was put in. In this financial year, if memory is correct, it's
about 1.2 billion, plus recovered funds of 600 million. The budget of the NSFAS this year, if we add the FET, Funza Lushaka, excluding the private sector, which is actually a tiny proportion, is over 2 billion. Going forward, you're looking at a significant investment, which would be at least 2.5 billion, if not more, in the next 5 years, assuming that the market and the economy continues to improve. The investment will be significant. In terms of it. And so what we need to do is to make sure that that investment really reaches the people that it ought to be reaching, and we're getting the sort of return on that investment. And part of the solution might be looking at IT infrastructure, but in itself may not be the only instrument that we will then be using to be able to move these resources to ensure that they reach the right people. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you ever so much. I think we do appreciate what the NSFAS is doing. When we actually are shouting and whatever, we are trying to alert you so that we can work together. I think Honorable Dudley, we have agreed that we'll be smiling at 12:30 for the photo.
Maybe I'll just
think
I'll stop thinking, but I'll doubt it.
Oh, I see.
So,
yeah.
But I have plans
to begin. Yeah. No problem. Thanks ever so much.